Well, a big story, of course, this week, and that is the BHP attempted takeover of Anglo American. And you know what it's like when you try and sell something you hold dear, like a house or a car or a piece of art or a piece of furniture that you've just loved, and nobody will offer you what you think it's worth. The board at Anglo American is probably feeling a bit like that. Anglo American says the offer from BHP Group significantly undervalues the company. What we've seen today is BHP shares moving lower once again. Well, that is, again, another 5% lower. Some investors say a higher price is going to be needed to seal the deal. What is interesting here is Anglo American share price is going up while the potential acquirer is going down. Mining analyst Peter Major with us. You've analyzed these things many times. Peter Major, you know that when there is a potential deal in the offering and the offeror is falling and the potential asset that they're looking to acquire is going up, that the market is sending us a very clear signal. What is that signal?
Well, the first signal is that most South African mining assets, they are grossly undervalued, but they always have been. You know, that was the price you paid to come into a country that had an unstable environment politically and economically. So the more assets you got in South Africa, the bigger the discount. BHP thinks they found a way around that. They say, well, it's no longer a South African company. It's a UK listed company. We will just let go of the South African assets. We don't want them because they're always going to be discounted and it'll drag down our share price. But boy, we sure love some of those overseas assets Anglo American has, especially its South American assets, which happen to be iron ore and copper, which are two very big, important metals in the world and in Billiton's life.
Now, Anglo American's response to this is, no, go away. It's not go away and never come back again. It's go away. Your price is too low. Give us a proper price and we'll think about it. But that is their duty, I suppose, as directors of the company to say, you know, we have a different idea of what we think we're worth. You put a decent offer on the table. Certainly we can talk.
Exactly. This happens all the time, Bruce. You know, when it happens, you and I, we go down to Checkers, 7-Eleven, and we, or no, CNA, and we say, hey, where's those standard forms? I want to write out a will. And, oh, throw in a couple hostile takeovers, you know. So the typical one page that you get at CNA says, we are insulted by your grossly iniquitous undervalued offer. Of course. And if you're sitting in a head office and you've been there for 30 years working your way up the company, you know, you don't want somebody in Australia taking it over. Boy, who wants to report to an Australian?
And there is also the politics of it. Gwede Mantashe saying it's not the official South Africa position, but I don't like BHP Group. They don't behave in a way that I find appealing. What is it that BHP Group has done in Gwede Mantashe's time that has made him averse to the way in which they function and operate as a mining company?
I'll tell you why I would hope Gwede is protesting this. I kind of doubt it, but I would hope Gwede is protesting this because Anglo American did more to grow and develop this country than the rest of the country almost put together. They went from nothing in 1917 till by 2010, they had beaten the S&P 500. Now, which share on this planet can beat the S&P 500? Which share on this planet had a million employees in the late 80s, early 90s. And look at the number of companies that Anglo spawned and created. You know, those were a million real jobs with pensions, benefits, safety, health, medical, and all those employees could get a bank loan because they worked for Anglo American. Now, sure, Gwede and his thugs have done the best to dismember Anglos and to chase them out of the country. And we're still living with many, many of those companies, you know, from Mondi, AMEC. Okay, a lot of them are now broke. A lot have been sold, but Anglo's was a fabulous job creation machine, something the ANC can only dream about. They don't know how to create jobs, and a lot of companies and people don't. Anglo was a master at creating jobs and businesses. That's why Gwede should not want this company to be taken over. And he can
I'm going to challenge you, if I may, I'm going to challenge you a little bit on that, mate. And you make the point, up until 2010, it was outperforming the S&P 500. It was absolutely instrumental, as you say, in shaping the modern economy of South Africa. Without Anglos, South Africa would be a fundamentally different place. Some would say a better place. I would disagree. But have they... they've not covered themselves in glory since 2010. There have been some missteps. There have been some strategic mistakes. There have been, do they still have the right to exist as an independent company? Or are investors in Anglo American better off holding shares in a company that runs the Anglo assets better than have been run in recent times?
Bruce, why don't you think back on De Beers? Every pension fund had De Beers. Every private investor in this country had De Beers. And I fought as long and hard as anybody to prevent it from being delisted. And some of our own revered financial genius institutions said, no, no, Pete, we're happy to help take the axe and chop the golden goose because we want the extra egg. We know that goose puts out one egg a day, but if we kill it right after it lays the first egg, we'll get a second egg. And so they rallied around and they sold out De Beers. It's gone forever. And sure, these are cyclical, Bruce. Sometimes they're too high. We should sell them. You lighten up in your portfolio. And where they're low, you load up. And my fund was number one as much as anyone else's fund in the history of South Africa. Not because I have a brain, but because I loaded up at the low part of the curve. And I sold off, lightened up at the top. So if you want to eliminate Anglo American, fine, you eliminate it. You'll never have that portfolio option. Now you can put double BHP in your portfolio and you'll be stuck with it. We need options.
No, exactly right. So it's optionality. At the same time, not all investors are going to have the same warm memories of Anglo-American as you. They will be looking to see whether or not they can get a good profit on investment in Anglo-American. They will have to assess whether or not the assets of Anglo-American are better managed, likely to be better managed by BHP Group. And I'm curious as to, without the legacy and the emotion of it, what the best interest is in your view, not just for investors in Anglo American, but for the South African economy as a whole, in terms of leaving assets like Kumba and Anglo American Platinum without a high level shareholder, and with BHP Group being that much more dominant as part of the overall market.
Look, excellent question, as usual, Bruce. You've got two kinds of investors here. As a private investor, I would take the money. Yeah, Anglos was trading all year for around 5, 5, 10. It's always traded at 30% discount. It always will. So, hey, I'll take the money as a private individual, especially if I've got a short-term horizon. But if I'm someone like the PIC and the IDC and supposedly the ANC who's governing the country, they are supposed to be taking a long-term view. What's good for the country? What's good for the country is we keep those assets under our control, keep them under Anglo's control. What's good for the country is having diversified large producers here. And as you point out, solo producers of just one metal don't cut it. Ernest Oppenheimer knew that in 1917. That's why he put diamonds in Anglo's after he had gold. That's why he then put in copper. You need to balance it. So yeah, a short-term holder, he'll take the highest price today, and he's entitled to and should. But if I was managing this country's portfolio, PIC, IDC, and government, then I would look 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, what's best for the country. And that's what Gwede should hopefully be doing.
Peter Major, as always, massively thought-provoking. Thank you so much. Mining analyst Peter Major with us this evening. Anglo American saying no thank you to the first offer that has been tabled, an indicative offer that has been tabled by BHP Group. Told them to go away. They've got till 22nd of May to make a more substantive offer if they want to. Someone else may step into the breach in the meantime. But why is it that BHP is so averse to South Africa? On Money Show Explainer this evening, Dr. Azar Jameen, Director and Chief Economist at Econometrics. South Africa, it's home. It is the place where most of us have our pension funds. It is the place which we depend on for the future. What is it, Dr. Azhar Jameen, Director and Chief Economist at Econometrics, that BHP sees differently from the rest of us?
It's not that BHP sees this as a bad story. It's just that it sees the mining sector in South Africa as having lost its luster in this particular country quite massively. Mining was the bedrock of the South African economy over many years. And yes, we have exploited a lot of minerals and geologically, we have probably left very little less behind than we would like to have, got less behind than we would have liked to, but there's still enormous potential. The problem is that the country has really lost its way in terms of managing this mining sector in a manner that could make the most of the opportunities available, especially in the first decade of the 21st century, when there was a massive commodities price boom. South Africa really missed out on that due to a lot of own goals by the government itself, unfortunately.
And when you are a global player and you are on every continent on earth and you are digging a portfolio of commodities out the ground and getting those commodities to market, you have to, I suppose, take the path of least resistance. Mining is hard enough in really attractive jurisdictions to not then have, I suppose, the complexity of managing the disparities that exist in South Africa in terms of just how tough it is to run a mining business in this market.
Very much so. And the country has shot itself in the foot in many respects. And this has formed part of the deindustrialization of the country over the past quarter century. You've had a lot of government interference that has actually made it very unattractive for players to be in this market. You've had the spawning of a major electricity crisis. You now have the evolution of a major water crisis. And on top of that, you've had huge labor relations problems to deal with. Demands for wage increases way in excess of productivity. Yes, it's very tough being a miner, and one would like to reward workers accordingly. But the point is, it's become very unprofitable in relation to what used to be the case to mine in this country. There's also been this obsession with maintaining safety within the mines that has actually just added enormously to the cost base of these mining companies.
What, in your assessment, then, do we do here? As in South Africa, you've got regulators, you've got very big shareholders in Anglo American, in form with state influence, whether that be the IDC and the PIC, the Public Investment Corporation, and others. Peter Major making the point that South Africa is built largely, the modern South African economy is built off the sweat equity, the balance sheet of Anglo American, which in isolation times was therefore one of the few funders of the creation of new enterprises. And it was absolutely instrumental in shaping the modern economy. It is still a very big and influential business within the South African economy. Is there a risk that we lose that sort of, I don't know, economic backstop of the big gorilla that is Anglo's?
I think there is a huge risk that the South African economy will be a lot poorer should Anglo-American disappear. And this is, it's a strange statement to be made from someone who's always argued that there's too much concentration of power in the hands of a few large businesses in the country. But at the same time, I do believe that it is still contributing enormously. And what I fear is that we will see further declines in the, at least Anglo has still, even though it's listed in London and based in London officially, it's still got a major loyalty towards South Africa. One fears that if a foreign company now comes in to take over, that any form of loyalty that still is prepared to work in this country despite all the headwinds that the sector faces, I think we could be far worse off if the likes of Billiton come here and basically just asset strip an operation like Anglo and really leave us with even less of a mining sector than we've got currently.
Thank you, Dr. Zajamin. Great explainer for us this evening, the Director and Chief Economist at Econometrics tonight. South Africa, if it didn't have an Anglo. And then Peter Major before that, talking about why South Africa desperately needs the Anglo-American of which has the innovation, the power, the balance sheet to continue to support South African enterprise. That's an economic and an emotional argument. It is part of the fabric of South African history and society. But certainly Anglo-American today pushing back very strongly against BHP Group's 700 and something billion rand offer, saying it's not good enough. It's not off the table, though. Could still come here on The Money Show.
The Money Show. The Markets.
Zwelakhe Mnguni is the Chief Investment Officer at Benguela Global Fund Managers. What a good day the JSE had, but it wasn't in isolation. Global markets had a very, very good session, and it seems to be continuing in the United States this evening, Zwelakhe.
Good evening, Bruce. Definitely a fantastic day in the market today. I think we've seen a strong rebound on the industrial side of the JSE and the financials. But as you said, I mean, the global markets have been great too. I think we've seen the tech stocks charging higher today as the results came through. So the issue around inflation seems to be on the back burner. The results are taking over.
Yeah, it is. And I wonder what is developing in the United States that is spooking certainly currency markets. And there's talk of stagflation. This is where you've got economies beginning to stagnate. It's been a long-term sort of on the list of potential risks for the global economy that at some point you run out of the growth initiatives in the economy. You also then have the problem of higher inflation. And so your economy slows down or stagnates, and then you get inflation coming in, and you can't cut interest rates to stimulate the economy because you've got an inflation problem. Are there signals of that beginning to emerge in the United States this week?
To some extent, Bruce, I think that the corporate earnings and the consumption has been relatively strong. I think the attempt to drive investment in the USA has been successful to some extent, but I don't think it kept pace with the rest of the four legs of the economic growth. So I do think that the strategy also on the trade with China, the trade war with China, has had some effect. So the two legs on investment and the trade have been affected to some extent, and you get in the corporate side and the individual side, basically the private sector, driving growth in terms of earnings.
That, however, is not something that's paid very favorably to emerging markets. Emerging markets currencies generally under a huge amount of pressure. South Africa's currency today, I don't know, it's only a one-way move, showing a little, I don't know, spark of life, maybe a small, faint pulse. You know, if things slow down a bit in America, that may be positive for our currency and possibly a little, you know, have some advantages for our economy.
Yeah, I think there's two fronts to that specific trend. I think the first one was from yesterday's news, that the speculation that if Anglo gets taken out and if you're going to have quite a bit of cash flow into South Africa. The other one is the fact that with interest rates being so high in the U.S. and inflation continuously showing signs of being better. I mean, it's not where they want it to be, but being better. I think the likelihood of rate cuts coming through in this year remains strong. So I think as a result of that, we would probably be having a positive differential or a bigger interest rate differential as a country.
And the impact of that, of course, is that money which looks for yield or a return, cash that flows around the economy, the so-called hot money, then some of it will leave the United States looking for a better interest rate, looking for a better yield. And it sort of spreads itself like a shotgun all over the world. And some of that will trickle into South Africa. And it is a bit like a shotgun. I mean, it feels fairly random at the best of times. And some of it then comes to a market like South Africa where rates are likely to remain higher for longer and goes, yeah, we'll have a bit of that interest rate. Thank you. We're willing to take some currency risk. And actually, we may see the currency strengthen.
Absolutely. I think even on top of that, I mean, if you look at our bonds, you look at our equity market, it's quite attractive relative to other markets, even compared to other emerging markets. Certainly, I think the election in May would probably be a speed bump in terms of the direction of which way does it go. Do we get coalition or not coalition? But if it does go the coalition route, it might have a temporary a benefit if the partners that are leading the country are actually more constructive towards the policy reform.
Thank you, Zwelakhe Mnguni, who is the Chief Investment Officer at Benguela Global Fund Managers this evening. JSE having a spectacular 2 days yesterday, driven by excitement around a potential offer by BHP Group for Anglo American. That deal was then rebuffed, at least in its early stages, by Anglos. BHP going back to the drawing board, deciding whether or not to actually make an offer higher than where they've pitched it at the moment. But today, certainly money flowing into financial stocks. Good day for Old Mutual, First Rand at Standard Bank. Great day for ShopRite, for Sun International and Mr. Price. Bidvest was amongst the winners as well. But the slightly stronger currency hurting the likes of the gold shares and British American Tobacco and AB InBev, others that earned their money in hard currency and get those profits translated in our minds, at least to rands. Those were the ones that took a bit of a knock on the day. But yeah, ended the week above 75,000. There's something to like about that. So we're on to our Friday file, and a mother and son team, a mother and son based company, striving to create products that are superior in quality and results. But then everybody does that. They call themselves Iman Luxury Organics. Okay, that's different. They all make, these companies, big claims about formulation and ingredients and about values. So how do you differentiate? How do you stand out in, I think, a massively, massively competitive market in the world of pricier, I'm not going to say expensive, pricier cosmetics, where you're saying to your customers that this is something that we need to, you know, we need to charge a little bit more because our products are better than everybody else's products. And that, I think, is quite a difficult thing to do in a globally competitive market where everybody is fighting for market share. So that is what we're doing this evening with Noura Fazi. Now, Noura is director and founder of Iman Luxury Organics. So what is the USP without resorting to the jargon? Yeah, Noura, because everybody in your industry says very similar things about what it is they do.
Okay. Good evening. Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm waiting with bated breath. I asked a friend of mine earlier today, a very experienced broadcaster, and I said, just give me a summary of how you feel what I do. And she said, you interrupt too much. So I'm not doing that anymore.
Okay. Well, I don't mind if you interrupt if you have a question, if you have a question to ask, so that's good. So what makes Iman Luxury Organics different from the many other skincare manufacturers in the world? I think I fall into a niche market in that my brand is halal, which means that most of my products contain little to zero alcohol in most of them. Which means that they assist in giving the cells longevity. They don't break down the cell walls over time.
Explain that to me. Yes, I'm breaking my friend's rule here, but that's a particularly pertinent and interesting bit. One, yes, the halal, and you, again, are serving a market that is limited in its choice because you can't be putting products with alcohol on your skin, I suppose, as a Muslim. So you are therefore going to be looking for something that doesn't have it. But there is also a scientific reason as to not to include the alcohol. Now, that's also interesting. Explain.
Yeah. So I think from my perspective, it's not really religious-based. It's more cellular-based. In other words, what do cells do to the cell walls over time from a scientific perspective and also from a vibrational frequency perspective? There's no enhancement in the frequency of the cells as most organic other products do. It actually breaks down the cell walls over time. So from a science perspective, we try not to include such ingredients into the cells because we want to have the cells rejuvenate themselves and not deteriorate over time. You want to give the cells longevity.
Okay, so how then, because if I spoke to one of the large global manufacturers, they would suggest that their products did the same sort of thing. And it really is a very challenging environment to come into. What's the backstory of this? Because I wonder where you got the idea, the inspiration, and the sort of idea to launch your own independent brand.
So I owned... I worked for a spa many years ago, and they had a skincare range that was very chemically induced. And I could see the impact of these chemicals on some of the skin that the clients had. So I decided to try and, because I understand cellular nutrition and cellular health and how organic products can assist in a higher vibrational frequency in the cell. So when a human being is healthy, the cells vibrate at about 65 hertz. Organic products vibrate at 75 hertz and higher. So when the cells absorb organic products, whether you're ingested or topically, they assist to heal the cells and they detox the cells. So some of my clients have said about 2 weeks after using my products, the pigmentation started peeling off their face because that's a detoxing and healing of the cells from the ingredients that they absorb.
Okay, so and the scientific basis of it, I mean, you say you understand this sort of environment. This is a deeply scientific process. Do you have a scientific background? Does your son, who's in business with you, have a scientific background?
I understand frequency. So I understand how frequencies work in the body and also some of the ingredients that are used. So I went through a whole testing with my manufacturer over a period of time, and I found out for myself that certain ingredients are harmful. Even though they are organic, they can be harmful to the skin. So you have to remove certain organic ingredients. Even though some companies say they're organic, you need to make sure that the ingredients included do not harm the cells. So for example, alcohol can be organic, but it may not be good for the cells. So I make sure that every ingredient that's included in my products actually assist in rejuvenating the cells.
It's a fascinating one. And in terms of brand and in terms of reaching your market, the great difficulty, of course, is the distribution channel, making sure that people get to know who you are and finding out who you are and are able to sample the product. All of that stuff is so important in that industry.
Yes. Yes, it is. So currently, I just do actually online and word of mouth right now. Yeah, so I'm actually at the Organic and Natural Expo this weekend. So that's how you guys managed to get hold of me. So, so I am there this weekend and I try and find expos that I can be at because I know I fall into a very niche market. So not every market is really one that I would necessarily be at. So, this market is a good one that I'm at. And I sell online at imanskincare.com.
But it's so important, isn't it, to be able to get that product into the face of the consumer, at least into the face of a distribution channel. And everybody I've spoken to in the startup world, particularly if you're building a consumer product, it is, you know, you choose your market, you identify who your market is likely to be, and you target them relentlessly, and you make sure that you go where they are going to be, and you make sure that you're ready to do so.
Yeah, that is correct. So I'm very careful. I sort of look at where my market would be most, the clients are most accessible. So it is a little bit challenging. I have approached maybe one or two companies in terms of retailing, but I think I was more refining my brand. And that's why I haven't really gone out in terms of the distribution channels as yet, because I started the company only 2 years ago from literally zero money in my account because I knew it was something that was really important because there are so many carcinogen-induced products on the market which people are unaware of. For example, I just recently started making diffuser oils for the diffusers like they sell. That's got those little sticks, bamboo sticks.
Yes.
Because many, yes. So many of the diffuser oils have alcohol in them. So when the body inhales the alcohol over time, it tends to deteriorate the nasal passages and the lung linings. So I started making my own diffuser oils because I wanted them in my own house, but none of the oils that I smelled contain no alcohol, so I made my own as well. So that's also on my list of things that I created recently.
No, exactly. It's precisely, you don't like a product, or you don't like a segment, or you don't like a sector, or you have a problem that's not being solved by anybody else. Build your own solution. That's how many great startups begin. Thank you so much this evening to Noura Fazi, who is the director and founder of Iman Luxury Organic.